Okay, good. All right, so this is the lesson that I've been looking forward to. The first three lessons, they're cool, but this lesson, this is the one, I'm just telling you. All right, so themes of Daniel, or message of Daniel.
It's been a while. No, I said it's been a while.
Okay. That's cool.
Okay. Oh, wait.
You can look it up if you have to, but it'd be better if you didn't.
Oh, I just said, what was the question?
The message of Daniel. Actually, there were two messages.
Oh, excuse me. Right? No,
God rules the nations. Do not fear.
Yes.
And how to stay faithful in a world that's trying to get you to compromise your convictions. So there's the two parts of Daniel, which is chapters 1 and 3 through 6, where we already covered those, which is practical examples of Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel. And the world is throwing everything at them they can and trying to get them to just compromise even just a little tiny bit, and they never do. Then there's the other half of Daniel, which we started last week, but we didn't get very far into it, which is these visions of the future. And I made the point where it's not obvious at first how the two parts of Daniel are connected. But the visions of the future, in which Daniel predicts to, as you'll see today, insane precision, events hundreds of years in the future, it proves beyond any shadow of a doubt that God is in control. And if you really, 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 in the bottom of your heart, believe that God rules the nations, that He's in control, it will affect the way you live your life. For example, it'll allow you to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would rather go into the fiery furnace than to, bow down to this statue. Okay, got it? So we went through the story about them getting their position and then the thing with the fiery furnace and Daniel in the lions and all that sort of stuff. And then we went to Daniel 2, right, where we saw this vision and basically a very, very sketchy outline of the history of the Near East for the next 2,000 years. Okay, got it? But then I promised that then it'll get really crazy because now we're going to get into Daniel chapter 7, the vision of the four beasts. Now I'm going to read it. And the four beasts in this vision are the four parts of the statue: Babylon, Persia, Media, Greece, and Rome. So the four parts of the statue in Daniel 2 will be the four beasts in Daniel 7. Trust me, the details will prove this to be absolutely, unquestionably true. So Daniel 7. At the end of this lesson, if you struggle with believing the Bible is inspired by God, then I say you were not paying attention. All right? Judge for yourself whether that's true. All right. Daniel 7. All right. In the first year of King Belshazzar of Babylon, by the way, the year is 553 BC. Excuse me. Let me get to my right page here. Okay, sorry about that. All right, thrown to the lions, dreams of the future, great. Yes, the first year of Belshazzar, which is 553 BC. Now, I could ask you, when does Daniel start? But that's just asking a bit too much. It was 605 BC. So it's been 52 years already that Daniel's been held captive. At this point, there's no sign of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Maybe they're around, maybe they're not. And Daniel is still hanging in there. He had a dream. A vision passed through his mind as he was lying in bed. He wrote the substance of his dream. Daniel said, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven churning up the great sea, four great beasts, each different from the others, coming up out of the sea." In apocalyptic language, the sea represents the peoples, the nations. "The first was like a lion. It had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off and it was lifted from the ground. So it stood on 2 feet like a human being and the mind of a human was given to it." Let me stop right there. This is Babylon. And in fact, if you go to Babylonia, here's the gate there of Ishtar right there in Babylonia. And sort of the lion is to Babylon as the eagle is to America. All right. And it says about Babylon, it says, I watched this. Wings were torn off. It was lifted from the ground, so it stood on 2 feet like a human being, and the mind of a human was given to it. That's talking about Nebuchadnezzar, who came to believe in God. Now, this is not a big prophecy, because the fact is, as of 553 BC, the first beast is actually in the past. Right? So this is not even prophetic yet. Anyway, there was a second beast, which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, get up, eat your fill of flesh. It reminds me of the Flintstones. You got the Flintstones? All right. So anyway, so by the way, the 3 ribs are Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt, which are the 3 nations that Cyrus conquered. I'll get back to that in Daniel 8. All right. And then after that, I looked there before me. It was another beast, one that looked like a leopard, and on its back it had 4 wings. Let me see. So Babylon, Persia,
Greece.
This will be Greece. Got it? One that looked like a leopard. On its back it had 4 wings like those of a bird. At least it had 4 heads and was given the authority to rule. Now, I'm going to explain these 4 heads when we do Daniel 8. But believe me, the three in the case of Persian Media totally makes sense historically. And the 4 in the case of Greece, as you'll see, makes total sense. But that's not what this vision is about. This vision is about the fourth beast. This vision is a vision about Rome. Now remember, one of the sort of criticisms, if you will, of Daniel is that it was written after the events. So basically they say, well, it does prophesy Antiochus Epiphanes, Daniel 8, you'll see. But that's because it was written after the events. Well, the events that are prophesied in Daniel 7, those happened, in the 90s AD. Nobody would say Daniel was written that late, because we have Dead Sea Scrolls from 100 BC. Anyway, so let's learn about this fourth beast. After that vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. Remember, iron was associated with Rome in the earlier vision. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims. It trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. Count it, 10 horns. While I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came up among them, and 3 of the first horns were uprooted before it. The horn had eyes like the eyes of a human being and a mouth that spoke boastfully. So there's 10 horns, and then there's a little horn. And the little horn speaking boastfully, and he knocks over 3 horns. Believe it or not, every single detail in that prophecy is exactly what happened, and I guarantee you this cannot possibly be wrong. All right, and so then there's this vision of what happened, but I'm going to actually skip down to the interpretation of the dream. All right, so down here in verse, I want to know what the meaning of the fourth beast was, verse 19, which is different from all the others, and most terrifying with its teeth and bronze claws. It crushed and devoured his victims. Verse 20, I also want to know about the 10 horns on its head, the other horn that came up before which 3 of them fell. Now, have you ever read Daniel before? Have you ever read Daniel? All right. When you were reading Daniel 7, what did you think about the little horn and the 10 horns? What do you think?
It's confusing.
What the heck is that about? Now, imagine Daniel, because Daniel wrote this down. And Daniel must have thought, okay, whatever, write it down. But see, we have the ability to study history books, and I'm telling you, we're going to figure out what happened. All right, he gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom. Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome. That will rule up here on the earth. It will be different from all the other kingdoms. It will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kings. In case you're wondering, the 10 horns are 10 kings. Who will come from this kingdom? After them, another kingdom will rise, different from the earlier ones. It will subdue 3 kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress his holy people. He will try to change the set times and the laws. The holy people will be delivered into his hands for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit. His power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty and power and greatness of all the kings under heaven will be handed over to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. Now, was Rome a kingdom? Well, for roughly 700 years, it was not. It was a republic. Right? Who was the first king of Rome? His name was Augustus. So this is that. Here's that fierce beast with that little pixie horn. He knocks over three corns. Really weird stuff. Okay, here we go. So here are the first 10 kings. Augustus, Tiberius, Gaius, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Vitellius, Vespasian, Titus. And the 11th horn, the one who spoke boastfully, that changed the set times and laws, his name is Domitian. So Domitian was the first emperor, the first Roman emperor, to systematically persecute the church. He made Christianity illegal. In fact, he was the one who got John, the apostle John, exiled onto Patmos. So what do we learn about this guy Domitian? All right, now a good question is, how did Daniel in 553 BC know that the fourth kingdom would have an 11th king who would attack the saints? How did he know that? But what else does he say? It says, he will subdue three kings. Now here's what happened. This is crazy stuff. So Nero dies. Oops, this thing. All right, Nero dies. And he ended the, this was a dynasty. He dies, has no sons. So what happened was three generals of the Roman army sort of all simultaneously claimed to be emperor. And that is Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. But the obvious claimant to the throne was Vespasian, who was the most powerful general of Rome, but he was in Jerusalem, fulfilling a prophecy in Daniel chapter 9. So what he does is he rushes back to Rome, which was, 4,000 miles away. In the meantime, look, these guys only rule for a few months. Anyway, when he left Jerusalem, he left his son Titus there to complete the destruction of Jerusalem. But in the meantime, his other son, his name was Domitian, was in Rome. And guess what Domitian was doing? He was involved in overcoming Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. So I've got a question. How many times in all history has one future king taken out three preceding kings? I mean, how often does that happen? All right. So according to Daniel, the 11th emperor of Rome will actually take out three preceding emperors, all of which happened. But, let's go on a little bit more. It says here, he will try to change the set times. Here's what Domitian did. This is a fact. When he took the throne, he said, from now on, instead of it being October, from now on it's going to be Domitianus. And instead of being November, it's going to be Germanicus, which was his middle name. This guy was so arrogant that he actually had them change the name of two of the months. It'd be like, Biden saying from now on, instead of July, it's going to be Biden. Can you imagine the arrogance of this? Domitian was so prideful that his name became synonymous with pride. Oh, that person is a Domitian. All right, in fact, he demanded to be addressed as my Lord God Domitian. So when we see it says here, he will try to change the set times and the laws. And the laws, that's exactly what he did. Because you may not be aware of this, but the Roman law was the most famous legal system in the entire ancient world. In fact, France, Italy, most of South America actually uses Roman law. We have common law, but they had Roman law. And this guy, this pipsqueak king, he said, he canceled the Roman law and said, we're going to have the Domitian law. Okay? And the day he died, they got rid of the Domitian law, they brought back in the Roman law, and obviously they changed Germanicus and Domitianus to, basically October and November. All right? So, according to the prophecy, the 11th emperor of Rome will persecute the saints, will be extremely prideful, We'll get rid of three preceding emperors. We'll try to change the set times and the set laws. All right. And that's exactly what Domitian did. All right. What does that tell me? Well, it tells me the Bible is inspired by God. That's for sure. It tells me that God rules the nations. And when Domitian began to attack the church, how do you think the church felt about that? Were they like, this is really great? But do you think they could count to 11? I've got a question. Do you think the early church was able to count to 11? Right? They could read the book of Daniel. So they understood. They understood that this is actually from God. All right? So he's waging war against the saints. He subdues three kings, Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. All right? Etc. Okay, great. Okay. So anyway, he's going to try to change the set times and laws. Oh, and it's in verse 25. Yeah, verse 25. It says, he says, he will speak against the Most High, oppress his holy people, try to change the set times and laws. The holy people are delivered into his hands for a time, times, and half a time. Now, those of you who are in the Revelation class, what does that mean? Time, times, and half a time, which is three and a half times. Anybody remember that? Remember what the number three and a half means? Come on. Seven means complete or perfect. Three and a half means partial or limited. So basically what this is a prophecy, is that this persecution will last for a limited period of time. And then, of course, it says, then God will get rid of Domitian and his ilk, people like him, and then God's saints will possess the kingdom forever and forever. That is so cool. And we have some citizens of that kingdom sitting in this room tonight. Okay, so that's Daniel 7, but we're just getting started. Here's Domitian. By the way, that statue is in the museum in Ephesus, and the head alone is like this tall. This guy was, he's kind of a prideful guy. All right, so there are some facts about Domitian, all of which are, remember I said these prophecies will be fulfilled with ridiculous precision. Yes, sir, but we're not done. Then there's Daniel chapter 8. So Daniel chapter 7 is about Rome, the fourth beast. Daniel 8 is about Greece, and it's about Antiochus Epiphanes. Remember I said the audience of Revelation is the early church suffering persecution under Domitian, and also Daniel 7, but actually the main audience of the book of Daniel is the Jews suffering extreme persecution under this guy, Antiochus Epiphanes, in 167 to 164 BC. Now we're going to read about that now. Okay? In the third year of the King Belshazzar's reign, so now it's 551 BC, I, Daniel, had a vision after the one that had already appeared to me. In my vision, I saw myself in the citadel of Susa in the province of Elam. In the vision, I was beside the Ulai Canal. I looked up, and there before me was a ram with two horns standing beside the canal. And the horns were long. One of the horns was longer than the other, but a grip later. I watched the ram as it charged toward the west, to the north, to the south. No animal could stand against it, and none could rescue from its power. It did as it pleased and became great. All right, this is not Greece. This is Persia. And by the way, here is Susa, and there's the Ulai Canal. And when you're sitting in Susa, looking across the Ulai Canal, you're looking towards the west, towards Greece. This is about Cyrus. Cyrus, who came to power, and he conquered kingdoms, first to the west, which was Lydia, which would be in Turkey today, then to the north, which from Persia would be Babylon, and then to the south, which is Egypt. So Persia gained power by conquering three great kingdoms. First to the west, like it says there, then to the north, and then, of course, to the south. Exactly fulfilling this prophecy. But again, this prophecy is not principally about Persia, it's principally about Greece. So let's get on to the next slide. Okay. As I was thinking about this, suddenly a goat with a prominent horn between its eyes. Let me tell you this is Alexander the Great. And we're about to have a three-sentence biography of Alexander the Great. And if you question this is about Alexander the Great, just read a history book. Okay? A prominent horn between his eyes came from the west. From the west. Crossing the whole earth without touching the ground, it came towards the two-horned ram I had seen standing beside the canal. Oh, wait, I forgot something. Remember it says two horns, one was longer, but it grew up later? What that is, it's the Persian-Mede Empire, this dual empire. Initially, it was the Medes and the Persians. But then when Cyrus took the throne, it became the Persians and the Medes. All right, that's what's going on there. All right, the two-horned ram I had seen standing beside the canal, and it charged at it with great rage. This is the goat with the prominent horn. I saw it attack the ram furiously, striking the ram, shattering its two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against it. The goat knocked it to the ground and trampled on it, and none could rescue the ram from its power. The goat became very great, but at the height of its power, the large horn was broken off, and in its place, four prominent horns grew up towards the four winds of heaven. And again, imagine Daniel writing this stuff. Okay, the horn, four horns, and charging from the west, and you know all this sort of stuff. Now, Alexander the Great, the year was 335 B.C. He crossed from Europe to Asia, across the Straits of Dardanelles. He had 30,000 soldiers. Persia had a standing army of 200,000. 2 years later, the entire Persian Empire was completely destroyed by Alexander the Great. Exactly as prophesied. Charged from the west, of course. And he describes it as if he's just floating above the ground. Now, Josephus tells us that when Alexander the Great came to Jerusalem, the teacher of the law showed him a copy of the book of Daniel. Like, you know, this is you. And he was very nice to the Jews. In fact, until the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, the Greeks treated the Jews really, really well, actually, which is interesting. Okay, great. So then he died. He died in 323 B.C. at the age of 35. He was very young. So what happened was there was like battle amongst his generals. And guess how many dynasties emerged? Just read the scripture. Guess how many dynasties emerged from Alexander's great empire? Guess how many? There they are. The dynasty of Antigonus, Cassander, Lysimachus, and Ptolemy. Okay, later on in Daniel 11, Ptolemy and his successors will be the king of the south. So those are the four. Now let's read what happened next. We're about to get to Antiochus Epiphanes. All right? Out of one of them, I'll tell you, it's out of Ptolemy. Out of one of them, it'll be Ptolemy. Out of one of them, came another horn which started small but grew in power to the south and to the east and toward the beautiful land. What would that be? It grew until it reached the host of heavens. It threw some of the starry host down to the earth and it trampled on them. It set itself up to be as great as the commander of the army of the Lord. It took away the daily sacrifice from the Lord. His sanctuary was thrown to the ground because of rebellion. The Lord's people and the daily sacrifice were given over to it. It prospered in everything it did, and truth was thrown to the ground. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to him, "How long will it take for the vision to be fulfilled? The vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the rebellion that causes desolation, the surrender of the sanctuary, and the trampling underfoot of the Lord's people." He said to me, "It'll take 2,300 evenings and mornings. Then the sanctuary will be reconsecrated." Guess what? This is exactly what happened. So what happened was Ptolemy had a great general. His name was Seleucus. Seleucus attacked the most powerful of the four, which was Antigonus, and he conquered Syria. And Seleucus, this was like about 10 years later, so now it's around 312 B.C., something like that. Seleucus said, "You know, why should I give Syria to Ptolemy?" So he formed a fifth dynasty. And ultimately, when you get to Daniel 11, there'll be the king of the north and the king of the south. The king of the north will be the descendants of Seleucus, and the king of the south will be the descendants of the Ptolemies. Trust me. So anyway, so this guy, Seleucus Nicator, he first went from to the south, all right, and then taking Mesopotamia, basically. Then he went to the east, taking Persia, and then he took the promised land, the beautiful land. So in all this thing, the Ptolemies owned Palestine. The Jews are under the Ptolemies. But finally, the grandson of Seleucus, whose name was Antiochus I, he actually took Palestine from the Ptolemies, exactly as prophesied. Got it? All right, that's all pretty cool. But then what happened, out of one of them came another horn, and then it reached the host of the heavens, it threw some of the starry hosts. So here, now we're going to get to the queer of this dude, Antiochus Epiphanes, the ultimate anti-hero in the Bible. So what did Antiochus Epiphanes do? Well, he did exactly what it says here. All right? He put an end to the sacrifice. What he did was, he actually slaughtered pigs in the temple. And he smeared the blood of pigs all over the temple, including the Holy of Holies. And he made sacrifice illegal. He said, if you circumcise your male children, we will kill your children, and then we'll kill you. And he put a statue of Zeus in the Holy of Holies above where the ark would have been. And the face on the statue was the face of Antiochus Epiphanes. All right? And so this prophecy is fulfilled in detail. Now I'm going to read about this in 1 Maccabees. Yeah, in 1 Maccabees. All right? So where's 1 Maccabees? It's right before 2 Maccabees. All right? You want to turn to 1 Maccabees?
No?
1 Maccabees 1, 41 through 54. Then the king issued a proclamation. You guys don't know about 1 Maccabees? Don't you ever read the Apocrypha? So I've got my Catholic Bible here, so I've got the Apocrypha. And I'm going to read about what happened here. So, now, Daniel was saying this over 300 years before it happened. Okay, 300 years. What was happening in California 300 years ago? 300 years ago. The Spanish weren't even here yet. You had a bunch of native people doing what they were doing. 300 years, that's a long time. That's well before the United States was formed. All right, got it? 300 years. Okay, here we go. All right. Then the king issued a proclamation to his whole kingdom that all were to become a single people, each renouncing his customs. All the pagans conformed to the king's decree, and many Israelites chose to accept his religion, sacrificing to idols and profaning the Sabbath. The king sent instructions by messenger to Jerusalem and the towns of Judea, directing them to adopt customs foreign to the country, banning sacrifices from the sanctuary, profaning the Sabbaths and the feasts, defiling the sanctuary and the sacred ministers, building altars, priests, and shrines, sacrificing pigs and unclean beasts, leaving their sons uncircumcised, and prostituting themselves to all kinds of impurity and abomination, so that they should forget the law and revoke all the observance of it. So, imagine you're in Jerusalem, and this guy, Antiochus Epiphanes, comes in, and he abolishes sacrifices. He makes observing Judaism a capital punishment. Are you thinking God's in control? Well, it depends on if you read the book of Daniel. It's right there in the book of Daniel. And again, they could count to five. They understand who Seleucus is. And they understand the guy in the prophecy is their current ruler. So when he turns against them and does this, it's like, okay, so the faithful Jews, I mean, they've got it. It's right here. Well, it's not. They didn't have this. This was written later. What they had was Daniel. All right? Now, why did this happen? Why did this happen? It says, because of rebellion, verse 12. Because of rebellion. God brought this on the Jews because of rebellion. Because of whose rebellion? Answer is, because of their rebellion. They were being very unfaithful and involved in every kind of idolatry. Now, the end of the story, after 2,200 evenings and mornings, they actually reestablished, they cleansed the temple and all that sort of stuff. And after 164 BC, that was the time of the greatest purity of the Jewish religion and victory for the Jewish people in over 500 years. The time of the Maccabees. So the net result of this terrible thing that happened to them, it happened to them because of their sin. It was a purification of the people and a victory for God's people like had never happened before for hundreds of years. God rules the nations. Because of rebellion. Oh yeah, should I read verse? Oh, I could read verse 57. No, you get the idea. So the bottom line is exactly what it says in Daniel is exactly what happened. Okay, so what then happened is, well, we could read about it there's more about it in Daniel 11, but let me kind of tell you the story. By the way, Daniel 11 describes all this in even way, way more detail than we just had. Way more detail. Kind of crazy level of detail, but down to the year and the month kind of stuff. So what happened was the Judas Maccabeus had a successful revolt. The abomination of desolation, which is, by the way, Jesus says the abomination of desolation, which is going to happen in 70 A.D., but he says, remember, Daniel told it, abomination of desolation. The abomination of desolation is that statue of Zeus with the face of Antiochus Epiphanes right on the face there in the temple. That is the abomination of desolation, which was repeated in 70 A.D. when Titus did a similar thing, but we don't have time for that. So anyway, Judas Maccabeus has a successful revolt. We can read about that in 1 Maccabees 4, verse 36. Where am I? Oh, yeah. 1 Maccabees 4, verse 36. All right. Here we go. Then Judas and his brothers said, now that our enemies have been defeated, let us go up and purify the sanctuary and dedicate it. So they marched with the whole army. They went up to Mount Zion. There they found the sanctuary, a wilderness, the altar desecrated, the gates burned down, vegetation growing in the courts as it might be in a wood or some mountain, while the storms were in ruins. They tore their garments, they mourned bitterly. And what they did was they actually lit the menorah, and there was only enough oil for one day, but it stayed for 8 days. Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the celebration of the rededication of the temple in 164 B.C. Okay? All that prophesied by Daniel. Now, how long will it take? And if we read the interpretation, let's read the interpretation starting in verse 23 of chapter 8. In the latter part of their reign, that is the Seleucids, when rebels have become completely wicked, talking about wicked Jews here, a fierce-looking king, a master of intrigue, will arise. He will become very strong, but not by his own power. By whose power? By whose power does he take control? It says, he will become very strong. This is Antiochus Epiphanes, but not by his own power. By whose power? God's power. Right? He will cause astounding devastation, will succeed in whatever he does. He will destroy those who are mighty, the holy people. He will cause deceit to prosper. He will consider himself superior. When they feel secure, he will destroy many. He will take his stand against the prince of princes. Yet he will be destroyed, but not by human power. It says 2,300 evenings and mornings. Okay, 2,300 evenings and mornings. That's 1,150 days. Now, it just so happens, the abomination of desolation happened in November 167 B.C. The rededication of the temple happened on December 25th, 164 B.C., which is about 3 years, 1.5 months. Do the math. That's 1,150 days. All right? He asked, how long will this desolation occur? He says 2,300 evenings and mornings, 1,150 days. So imagine you're one of these faithful Jews hiding in the mountains, risking your life for God. And one of these Hasidim, which eventually became the Pharisees, actually. And it's been 1,132 days, like 18 more days. And exactly as God said is exactly what happened. God rules the nations, do not fear. Oh, we're just getting started. What about Daniel 9? Talk about a prophecy. Talk about a specific prophecy. In the first year of Darius, of Xerxes, So this is like 536 BC. So it's about 15 years later. Now Daniel is about 80 years old. He's now been in captivity for about 70 years. So what he's doing is he's reading the book of Jeremiah. I can even tell you, he's either reading Jeremiah 25 or Jeremiah 29. Write in your notes, Jeremiah 25, 1 through 11, or Jeremiah 29, 10. And here's what he reads. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood from the scriptures, according to the word of the Lord given to Jeremiah the prophet, that the desolation of Jerusalem would last for 70 years. Thing is, he's been in captivity for roughly 69 years. So he's reading Jeremiah, and it says 70 years. He's like, awesome. God's about to work. So he starts praying. And basically says, God, deliver us now. You said 70 years. It's been, just read prayer. It's a bold prayer. And then God answers the prayer. But interestingly, instead of doing it in 70 years, he says 70 times 7 years. So let's read about that. So, Daniel 9. There's this awesome prayer. Let's get to verse 20. While I was speaking and praying, confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and making my crest of the Lord God for his holy hill, while I was still in prayer, Gabriel, the man I had seen in the earlier vision, came to me in swift flight about the time of the evening sacrifice. He instructed me and said to me, Daniel, I have now come to give you insight and understanding. As soon as you began to pray, the moment your prayer started, a word went out which I have come to tell you, for you are highly esteemed. Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision. 77s, not 70, but 77s. A decreed for you and your people and your holy city to finish transgression, to put an end to sin, to atone for wickedness, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know and understand this, from the time the word goes out to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, the ruler, comes, there will be 7 sevens and 62 sevens. All right, let's talk about that. So, what he's saying here is that the Messiah, the anointed one, is going to come to Jerusalem 77s after the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Is there a decree in the Bible somewhere? A decree by maybe a foreign king to go back and restore and rebuild the city of Jerusalem? Well, there's actually three possible candidates. The first candidate would be the letter that Cyrus wrote in 537 or 536 BC. But it's in Ezra chapter 1. You can read about Ezra chapter 1. But there, he did not say to rebuild Jerusalem. He said to rebuild the temple. And then there was another decree in 520 BC. This is from Darius. And basically, the Jews had stopped building the temple. So Darius says, hey, guys, come on, build the stinking temple. And then Haggai stepped in and Zechariah, and they rebuilt the temple. But it was not a decree to rebuild the Jerusalem. It was 458 BC, the decree of Artaxerxes in his 7th year. You can read about it. It's in Ezra chapter 7, verse 13 through 16. And Artaxerxes said to go back and rebuild Jerusalem. In fact, that's what actually happened. Nehemiah did it. A few years later, they rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. The year was 458 BC. Now, 70 times 7, I know you can do that math. Come on, you can do 70 times 7, right? 490. All right, so let's subtract 490 from 458. We get negative 32. Got it? No. Negative 33. You know why? Because there is no year zero. The calendar goes from 1 BC to 1 AD. So here in 536 BC, Daniel receives a prophecy about a decree that wasn't even given for another 50 years after he died. And that decree, 490 years later, 33 AD, that's when the Messiah is going to come to Jerusalem to put an end to sacrifice, to atone for wickedness, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to be anointed the most holy. All right, how about that? Now, I have to give you a very, very slight thing about that, because then he says 7 sevens and 62 sevens. That's verse 25. All right, So that's the quick story that I would give to somebody, just the quick version. But you guys are college students. I'm going to give you the more advanced version. Actually, if you read the prophecy, it basically what it says is during the last week. So seven sevens is 62 sevens. That's 69 sevens as opposed to, in other words, somewhere between 483 and 490 years. Right? That's kind of what the prophecy is saying. Well, Jesus almost certainly was killed in 30 A.D., not 33 A.D. You know, people say 33 A.D. That's what the Catholic Church says. We love the Catholic Church. They're great. They're awesome. But he was almost certainly not killed in 33 A.D. Let's ignore that detail. The bottom line is Daniel gets the date of Jesus being killed in Jerusalem, just nails it. That's a bad pun. That's a really bad pun. I will never do that pun ever again. I will never, ever do that pun again. All right. You understand what's happening here, right? Daniel, in 536 B.C., is telling us, using a decree that hadn't even happened yet, the exact time of the coming of Jesus to Jerusalem. That's pretty impressive. But he's not done yet. Oh, no, he's not done yet. See, that's actually during the last week. See that little thing there? Okay, being a little bit more precise. But then he goes on and he describes the destruction of Jerusalem in the rest of Daniel 9. He says, after 62 sevens, the anointed one will be put to death, will have nothing. The people of the ruler will come, will destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end will come like a flood. War will continue until the end, and desolations have been decreed. He will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7. In the middle of the seven, he will put an end to sacrifice and offering. And at the temple, he will set up the abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out on him. Now, what's interesting is, in Daniel 8, he describes the abomination of desolation. And then in Daniel 9, again, he describes the abomination of desolation. And if you read in Matthew 24, Jesus says, like he said in Daniel, the abomination of desolation. And what happened, we're talking about the year 70 A.D. Remember, Vespasian came there. There was the Jewish war. And what happened was his son Titus stayed behind. And when he destroyed Jerusalem, he offered pagan sacrifice right on the site of the temple. Sort of, in a sense, kind of reenacting the abomination of desolation that had been performed by Antiochus Epiphanes. Okay, so that's Daniel 9. And then there's Daniel 10 and 11. This is a scene from the Arch of Titus, which is in Jerusalem. It's still there. What you see is these are Jewish slaves bringing the items from the temple that were taken in 70 AD in the triumphal procession of Titus. It's right there in Rome, as prophesied by Daniel about 600 years before it happened. That's pretty amazing. There's Titus. Now, I don't know how long I've been going. I've been probably going too long. There's Daniel 10 and 11. And Daniel 10 and 11, it's crazy stuff. It's about Greece again. And Daniel, he has one vision and he passes out. And he passes out for a few days. And then the angel revives and he passes. I mean, this is like this overwhelming vision. The final vision that Daniel 10 and 11. And that's the one that goes into even more detail about Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, let's start in Daniel 11, verse 2. Now then, I tell you the truth, three more kings will arise in Persia, then a fourth who will be far richer than all the others. That fourth is Xerxes. Battle of Marathon, all that sort of stuff. All right. When he has gained power by his wealth, he'll stir up everyone against the kingdom of Greece. Right? You know about that little war of Persia against Greece? Yes? Okay, good. Then a mighty king will arise, will rule with great power, blah, blah, blah. And then he starts in verse 3 about the king of the south and the king of the north. Now, I don't know if you've read this section about the king of the south. And the king of the south will do this, and the king of the north will do that, and he'll leave behind this thing, and he'll attack this city, all this sort of stuff. Now, if you read a history book, for example, the book Between the Testaments by Pfeiffer, it describes all these things. All right, so in other words, what's described in Daniel 11:5 is about Ptolemy and Seleucus Nicator. Daniel 11:6 is about Antiochus versus Soter in his battles with Ptolemy the Second Philadelphius. And Daniel 11:6 is, I mean, you can just go through it and read my book of Daniel. Just read my book on Daniel and you'll see. right. Let me see. I have a suggestion. Where to read? I don't know. I don't see in my notes. All right. Well, let me see. Yeah, north versus south. So here's kind of the idea. It's going to be too involved here. All right, yeah, here we go. What the angel does not tell Daniel is that after some initial successes, Xerxes' campaign was to be a failure. The defeat of Xerxes marks the turning point in the back-and-forth conflict between Persian and Greek power. At this point, the vision leads forward to the next significant conflict between the Greeks and the Persians. Then a mighty king will appear, will rule with great power and do as he pleases. Daniel 11:3, that's Alexander the Great. And you go forward about the battles between the Seleucids and the Ptolemies. All right, verse 5. Verse 5. Daniel 11, verse 5. So you're reading Daniel 11, verse 5. Let me read the actual things. In 315 BC, Ptolemy I Soter, the founder of the Greek Ptolemaic dynasty, established himself in Egypt. In a battle in 312 BC with his strongest competitor, Antigonus, he rises to power, becoming the dominant successor to Alexander. However, Ptolemy's greatest general, Seleucus, the one who had defeated Antigonus, will break away from him to establish an independent dynasty in Mesopotamia. Eventually, his kingdom will become even greater than the southern kingdom of the Ptolemies. In other words, I'm reading a history book, and that's what Daniel 11:5 is talking about. Now, please just trust me on that. I better get a copy of my book on Daniel. And it just goes on and on and on with all these details. But then, Daniel 11, let's get down to verse 33. So, starting in verse 25, Daniel 11:25 is talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, and he has this battle with Ptolemy, and Rome intervenes, and all this, all very, very famous history. But in verse 33, those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. When they fall, they will receive a little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Some of the wise will stumble so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end, for it will still come at the appointed time. He's talking about the Jews, some of whom successfully resisted Antiochus Epiphanes. Some were put in jail, some were killed, but ultimately those who are wise will shine and be made spotless. Then Daniel 11:36 through 45 is a prophecy about the Battle of Actium in 33 BC and the final destruction of the Ptolemaic power. I don't have time to go into that, but it's describing all that stuff. So let's get to to Daniel chapter 12. Okay, I really like Daniel 11:33 through 35. Some of the wise will stumble, so they may be refined, purified, and made spotless. And that is the Hasidim, the Maccabeans. Here's the battle that occurred in 33 BC between Octavian and Cleopatra, who was the last of the Ptolemaic rulers. Yes, Cleopatra was the last of the Ptolemies. And that battle is described in great detail in Daniel 11, 35 through 46. But I don't have time for that. So let's get to Daniel 12. Let's get to the climax of Daniel. Got it? All right. Daniel 12, starting in verse 2. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake. Now, what Daniel does is exactly what happens in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation involves things that will soon take place, right? The book of Revelation is describing happenings under Domitian and his successors as they're persecuting the church. But then, Revelation chapter 21 and 22 fast forwards to end times. This is exactly what happens in Daniel. So at this point, Daniel 12:2, we're fast forwarding to the end of time. Okay, got it? So he says this is what's going to happen. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, roll up and seal up the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. So at the end of Daniel, what we hear is about a final resurrection. And he says, multitudes will rise. Some will go Some will be to everlasting life, and others to shame and everlasting contempt. Now, I tell you right now, I believe that I will be raised from the dead. I believe it. Why do I believe it? Because it says so in Daniel. Daniel, the one who said there'll be four kingdoms, and during that fourth kingdom, a kingdom will be created that will never be destroyed. The same Daniel who said it would be the 11th, not the 10th, not the 12th, the 11th emperor of Rome. They would persecute the saints for a time, times and a half a time. That he will knock out three prior kings. He will try to change the set times and the laws. Same Daniel who said that is the one who said multitudes will rise from the dead. Some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. The same Daniel who said that this goat with a prominent horn that will take out the ram with the two horns, who dies, who will be succeeded by four kings, and then a fifth one from who will eventually take the beautiful land and will persecute the saints and put an end to sacrifice, but who will be eliminated from power 2,300 in evenings and mornings later. The same one who said that 490 years, or technically between 483 and 490 years, after the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, the Messiah will come and will be anointed the Most Holy One. The same one who said all those things is the one who said this. He said, multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life and others to shame and everlasting contempt. I believe it. I believe it. How could I not believe it? How could you not believe the Bible is inspired by God? Because remember, God rules the nations. And he says, those who are wise, verse 3, will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Here's our evangelism passage. You know what? Everyone who's a saved person, they're like a star in the heavens. And I'm telling you, there's plenty of room up there. There's plenty of room up there. So our job is to try to take some of those pieces of coal, I guess, that are going to everlasting destruction and help them to become like the stars in the heavens forever and ever. And he says, those who are wise will do this. So, yeah, I believe that God rules the nations, and I believe that we should rely on that God who rules the nations. Now, I wish I had time to finish out Daniel 12. Basically, what Daniel does is, well, God, what about this and what about that? And God says, Daniel, stop. Stop talking. Just rely on me. I got it covered. Trust me, I got it covered. Basically, that's what he says. All right? So that's the end of our study. God rules the nations. Do not fear. Okay.